to Dialogue Assassination. This is
Mae Brussel speaking. Bill Kogan is away for the weekend, and we're going to do a show. I have a special guest today to share the program with us. And he's out from New York. His name is Richard Sprague. For the people who are new listening to Dialogue Assassination, I'll explain the nature of the program, and then we'll get right on with the show. Every week we talk about the political assassination of Robert Kennedy, John Kennedy, Martin Luther King, and I try to point out that there was a conspiracy that existed that killed these particular gentlemen, and I read government documents and commission reports and pending lawsuits pertaining these to particular cases, and I try to show you how these murders took place and who is in power today because of these political assassinations. Now, almost every single week I refer to a magazine called Computer and Automation, because since May 1970, this trade magazine has articles on the political assassination. They started with the assassination of John Kennedy and the application of photographic evidence that can be put into computers to show where the gunmen stood, what positions, how many there were. And the gentleman who wrote the first article for Computer and Automation in May 1970, he did another issue in May 1971, and he's done many of the issues since that time. His name is Richard Sprague. And Carmel is isolated from the mainstream of the big cities, and we're really lucky to have Mr. Sprague here today. He came out from New York, and he came to Monterey Peninsula to speak at the Navy Postgraduate School last night, the computer department. And evidently the computer department has read all of his articles, and they read all the articles on the political assassinations. They were familiar through the literature, knowledgeable about many facts of the political assassinations. And they had a dinner last night at the Navy Postgraduate School, and Mr. Sprague spent 4 hours showing Zapruder movies, the famous movies that we'll discuss, and pictures of the assassination of John Kennedy and how it took place. So when I heard that Mr. Sprague was coming out from New York, I called him right away and said, would you stay over and be on the program with us and have a dialogue with me today so the people in Carmel, the Monterey Peninsula, Santa Cruz, Salinas can share this experience as long as you're out here. And he agreed to come. And we will meet this evening for everybody who can get down here from the northern area that we didn't notify or people listening. If you come tonight at Monterey Peninsula College, Lecture Forum 102, Mr. Sprague is going to repeat his slides and shows. Now, how about telling them about a little bit about the information you brought out, what they can expect to see, and a little bit about yourself? The significance of the famous Zapruder movies, everybody talks about them, and you show them. Why don't you tell about your experience with those, why they're significant?
Okay, Mae. First, I want to thank you for having me, and it's a pleasure to be here. As you mentioned, last night was a meeting sponsored by, actually, the Association for Computing Machinery, and it was a joint meeting of two chapters, the student chapter at the Naval Postgraduate School, and the Golden State, I'm sorry, I guess it was the Southern Bay chapter, south of San Francisco, both chapters of the ACM, we call it. Actually, what I will show tonight will be first a photographic film, a movie, taken by an Abraham Zapruder, an amateur photographer who was at the scene of the assassination, and about 140 slides of actual pictures taken at the assassination site, or shortly, either during the time of the assassination or shortly after. Some of the pictures are actually in certain other locations, but they're key evidence in the assassination. And whoever comes will, I hope, be able to judge for themselves by looking at actual pictures, including the one movie. I feel that there's a very important aspect to photographic evidence in this case, and for that matter, any other investigation one's carrying on. If you have enough photographs showing an event from different angles, taken by different cameras, you should be able to tell pretty much exactly what happened. Well, whereas witnesses sometimes tend to forget or lie in some cases.
Well, the significant thing, I think, is that people, private individuals, not related to government investigating agencies like yourself or myself, have to get together and show these things to the people. It's kept from them, like the slides that you showed that were taken, and you can tell how many people took pictures. I think this is of interest to the listeners, how many cameras were used and photographed the event. And you see a picture of the window where Oswald was supposed to be, and other cameras caught the window from across the street, and he isn't in the window.
That's right. Actually, it was one of the most photographed events in the history of our country, certainly the most photographed murder or assassination. There were 75 photographers on the site taking pictures with movie cameras, still cameras, located pretty much all over the area where the assassination took place. It was called Dealey Plaza in an area of near downtown Dallas. And these photographers took a total of something on the order of 25,000 individual frames of movies or still photographs. I classify a photograph as either a movie sequence or a still photo. And looking at it that way, there were something like 520 photographs taken and about 25,000 movie frames plus still photos. That's just a tremendous amount of photographic evidence in this case. And if you're looking for example, pictures of that window, you can find three or four of them almost at the time of the shots or a little before, a little after, and with no one showing in the window and no rifle sticking out of the window.
I think another thing that's so interesting that is very impressive in the photographs was the amount of suspects being taken off and that people are not aware of it because the Dallas police had no other suspect.
That's
and you
right.
show one slide after the other, and it's also in computer automation has a few pictures of suspects being led away, and nobody was taken to the police department. They were taken off by the arm or by the policemen, and no one knows what happened to them. No one was held.
That's very true. Some of the pictures show men who were arrested and whose identity was known, but in more cases than that, we find men arrested and no record of who they were or why they were, or what happened to them at least. In one case, we have three men arrested for drunk and disorderly, and you don't have any record in the 26 volumes of who they were, no booking records in the police department to show who they were or what happened to them.
Yeah, well, the keeping of the films, too, is important, how one person, like Life magazine, one group, could buy up these pictures and many important pieces of film that you talk about where you don't have access to those. How can you get these? How can you force government officials to release? Once they buy up that, so do they have the right to buy up? Isn't there some legal twist that could be worked out?
I don't think that a private organization like Life magazine or United Press, for example, really has any moral, legal, or any other sort of right to buy the pictures of an event like this. I think the photographic evidence belongs to us. It belongs to the people.
Well, like the autopsy x-rays. I want to talk about the committee to investigate assassinations, and I want to ask you why Bernard Fensterwald, who heads that committee and is a lawyer, has never gone into the legality of their buying the physical evidence.
Well, actually, we have, May. Right now, we're working on three separate cases to try to release the photographic evidence that either the government, and particularly the FBI, or private organizations such as UPI or Life magazine have sort of secreted away. And there are several mechanisms for doing this, the main one being the Freedom of Information Act in the case of the government. We're in the process of filing a suit to obtain access to about 9 photographs that the FBI has in their possession somewhere. They're not in the National Archives, but we have records of many types showing that the FBI has these pictures, and at least 6 of those 9 are extremely important in showing, I think, conspiracy.
What
I'll give you one example. There was one photo we know existed. It was taken by a Canadian who turned it over to the Royal Canadian Mounted Police. Actually, he turned it over to Liberty Magazine, and then they turned it over to the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, who in turn gave it to the FBI. We know that photograph reached the FBI. We know it didn't get to the archives. That's where it stopped.
What did it show?
It showed the 6th-floor window from which Oswald supposedly fired all the shots, empty, with no rifle, no person in the window, between the first and the last shots.
You see, the slides that you have that the Warren Commission didn't use that show an empty window are important. But when a private photographer takes a picture of an empty window and the FBI keeps it and they're investigating the case, then you wonder how much information they're holding back altogether. We know how much they're holding back, but
we have some feel for it. They may be holding back a great deal more than we even know about.
Yeah, well, I've wondered why Life magazine can buy any films, like from Abraham Zapruder, why all the physical evidence on the murder of John Kennedy was either destroyed or bought or locked up?
Well, I think it's a complex question. Certainly Life paid a lot of money for the Zapruder film.
But no amount of money has the right to buy them.
That's right. And the fact that they were allowed to do that seems to me indicative of the fact that the people who arranged the assassination, in my opinion, and arranged for the cover-up of the assassination, probably wished that Life magazine would buy the film, wished that they would buy something else, and then keep it secreted away, which they did.
How much research has been done on the life of Abraham Zapruder, the man who took the pictures, his associations, who he works for, how he's employed? What do you know about him?
I don't know personally too much. He had a factory, a light manufacturing company, in the Daltex building.
Do you know? Oh, really?
Which was right next to the depository building.
Do you know his political affiliations or contacts or banks? Or how he, his modus operandi? See, I have a theory which I mentioned to you this morning. I feel that Zapruder was what I call the court photographer. And that his being there and taking the picture of John Kennedy, the way he stood on the grassy knoll and photographed the direction that he did, you couldn't pick up any of the places where you say the gunmen were located.
That's true. He was facing the wrong direction.
He faced the wrong direction, and all he did was say, this is John Kennedy moving here, and this is John Kennedy, and he's had one shot. Or then he moves along, he's had another shot. Well, we all know he died. But the very fact that nobody to use any of the other films to solve the crime. The Warren Commission didn't use these other films.
They didn't even use the Zapruder film, actually, if you come right
down
to
it. Well, see, they let Life buy it up, and maybe that would protect them in case they caught something that they didn't want to have. Well, they could say it belongs to Life.
I think there is always a possibility that may have happened, but in this case, we had two photographers standing on the other side of the street, taking movies facing the other direction with the grassy knoll and, in my opinion, two of the assassins in the background on the knoll. And in those two cases, United Press bought those films.
Well, see,
they suppressed those films just as much as Life magazine suppressed the Zapruder film.
Yeah, but United Press is in on this conspiracy, so whether Life or United Press buys them, you divide the guilt of the crime.
I can't excuse any of the major news media.
Yeah, but if the United Press bought a picture that showed you an empty window, you know, and published it, you'd say, okay, they've done this. But if they buy it up and you can't use it later.
That's the point.
Can you use the pictures that United Press bought?
We hope to get access to the Nix film in the next few months. In fact, they've told us about 2 months ago that they would sell to us the whole film for a lot of money or individual frames from it for less money.
But what you're looking for couldn't be rubbed out by them.
I don't think so. I saw the original at UPI, and I know what it shows.
What did it show?
It shows a man on the grassy knoll holding a rifle. You can see the gray-blue color of the barrel. You can see him clearly. You can determine exactly where he's standing on the knoll on a little pedestal outside that eight-sided figure, cupola, I call it. And he clearly shows in several successive frames. You can also see him in the film jumping up or jumping down from this pedestal and moving toward a vehicle in the back. And in other films, we confirm that he drove away in that vehicle or someone drove him away.
Why didn't the Warren Commission use those films?
Well, they looked at the Nix film in motion. Now, if you look at a film in motion, you can see certain things, but if you look at it frame by frame, you can see a great deal more, especially the original.
Well, can't the FBI read films?
I'm sure that some of the FBI men that looked at it frame by frame saw what we saw. I don't see how they could have missed it. Certainly one thing that no one missed that ever looked at the Zapruder film in motion is the backward motion and to the left of Kennedy's head after the fatal shot strikes, the very last in the fatal shot. It's violently backward and to his left. That means a shot must have come from the right front, and the right front was the grassy knoll.
Well, I think that there's a lot of emphasis on the Zapruder movie, and I think it's valuable to understand the law of physics, just like the bullet trajectory from the sixth floor, coming through Oswald's body.
Yes.
But I think the conspiracy to conceal it is as interesting as the actual law of physics.
More important, I think.
It's more important because locking these films up, like the work that you do in the May 1970 issue of Computer Automation, you list all these different people who took pictures, and then the percentage that the Warren Commission used, and it's interesting that they wouldn't use all available evidence.
They used less than 5% of the total photographic evidence available. The FBI saw about a little less than 10% of it, and we know that because we know we can interview the photographers and find out whether the FBI ever had access to their films or saw the films. Well, 5% is an awfully small percentage.
Well, when you're wanting to find who killed the President of the United States, and you, certainly witness testimony is very flimsy, like Mr. Brennan, or no matter who was on the grass, the memory is very hard to capture,
That's
even
right.
At that exact moment. But the photographic evidence is so precise because you can look at it over and over again and it doesn't change. It's down.
That's right.
And the fact that the Warren Commission doesn't want to use the photographic evidence.
Cameras don't lie if the films are interpreted properly and if no one doctors them.
Now, you get a situation where there are 75 people taking pictures in the grassy knoll. You have 25,000 pictures. And yet you, as a private researcher, have to go to hours and hours of work, travel all over the country, to try and explain to people, and you write articles, and it's so time-consuming in addition to your regular work, just like my research is time-consuming. How did you get into this thing where you dedicate your life and all your free time into explaining to people how the Warren Commission didn't work and taking the other percentage of those 75 cameras and putting them into computers and trying to find out where the gunmen were? How did you get started on your path of seeking the truth?
Well, I was a skeptic like you, May, from the day the event happened. I guess the thing that triggered me most was the way that Oswald supposedly met and shot Tippit. I just couldn't buy that story when I first heard it. And that caused me to start questioning everything else that was being broadcast in those early weeks after the assassination by the Dallas police and the district attorney and then the FBI eventually. And so when the Warren Commission was formed, I was already a skeptic, but I didn't do very much research on my own except read every book I could get my hands on until 1966. In the fall of 66, which was 3 years after, you recall, maybe your audience of the event took place, November 22nd, 63, and in October of 66, I started research on my own. I had the encouragement of three people who I had met who really talked me into it, I guess the best way to put it. Sylvia Marr from New York, and Harold Weisberg, who at that time was near Washington.
They're good researchers.
And Ray Marcus in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And they all three said, why don't you work on the photographic evidence? We really need someone concentrating in that area. And I was living in New York City at the time, and as it turns out, close to 50% of all the photographic evidence was in New York City, surprisingly.
It wasn't even in Washington, yeah.
The reason was this. All of the... Anytime anybody takes a picture for news purposes, it winds up either at United Press, Associated Press, Black Star, and if it's television, of course, it would be CBS, NBC, or ABC, at least a copy of it.
Yeah.
And these pictures were all in the archives of all these organizations in New York City. I did go to Dallas, though, on three or four trips during the 66-67 period, collecting photographic materials from Dallas, especially from private individuals
who took pictures
of
the grassy knoll,
who had taken pictures all over the place.
Uh-huh.
And so I spent about 2 years from 66 to 68.
How did you start to correlate it? What did you do with them? How did you get
well,
started?
Well, of course, once I had enough photographs to begin to work, I began analyzing each one and correlating it with the rest that
the
I saw.
The position that they stood in, you mean?
First thing to do was to develop a timing reference to know when photographs were taken, and then once I had that developed, and I used a string of movies that sort of connected to each other, and then knowing the speed of the cameras, I could tell when various things took place. And once having established that, then I found that I could put together collections of movies in which a photographer would show in another movie or in another picture.
So you'd get his location.
And I could establish his position.
Uh-huh.
And by triangulation, I could establish various other events and objects. And so I started making a big table of people, things, objects, events,
can
happening.
Can you mark the curbs, the Dealey Plaza, exactly where the car was?
Oh, yes,
each time.
Absolutely.
It's all marked
off. Well, FBI actually had already made up a timing reference, table using the Zapruder film, which serves for the period of the Zapruder film. I did the same sort of thing using other films both before and after the Zapruder film. So there was a good start on it. And I think they did a credible job as far as that part was concerned. It's about the only thing they did right.
Yeah.
But anyway, and by the fall of 68, I had sort of become recognized among all the researchers as the leading person in the photographic evidence. And then people began sending me more pictures and leads to where to find others. And it just sort of multiplied from that point on.
Then what did you do with all... You had all these pictures, the stills and the movies, and you had people positioned into various locations.
Right. I spotted every photographer on a map of the plaza showing where they were standing when they took each of their photographs. Then I started making a documentary list of what each photograph showed, a photograph being a movie sequence or a still, remember.
Yeah.
And then I started documenting, tying them together. For example, just as an example, it's possible to pick up a person before the shots were fired and track him through the photograph, through a string of photographs in which he appears, and find out what he did and where he went.
Uh-huh.
For example, one of the policemen who ran up on the grassy knoll. You can follow him on his motorcycle to a point where he gets off and then running up the grassy knoll and watch other people following up on the knoll. Now, that's not as important as a rifleman, but it certainly is, is a kind of a thing you can do with pictures.
Yeah. When you put all this together, when you take all the photographic evidence, how do the computers work? You're in the computer field now and have always been. How can you apply the computers to assassination research? That's a big question. Itself. You could do a
whole hour
on that. But briefly, you know, the computers are such a vague thing to people who aren't familiar with them.
They are. That's right.
You don't know what you feed in them. How do you comply, like to your particular thing, the photographic evidence? How do the computers work?
Well, actually, the application to photographic evidence has not been too, I would say, deep or useful. We have done a little bit of work applying computers to analyzing the photographic evidence. But the prime effort we've engaged in, when I say we, by the way, it's the National Committee that we referred to earlier.
Yeah.
We'll get back to that, I guess. So when I say we, I'm talking about a whole group of individuals headquartered in Washington, D.C., although I live in the New York area. We work together closely. We have been applying computers to all of the evidence in a way. I'll try to explain it in a layman's sense here. It turns out that if you look at all the basic sources of evidence and all of the kinds of information that you have been working on for years and years, it just amounts to a mountain of information that individuals can't really look at or understand unless they have indexes and have a way of finding things.
Yeah.
That's just to start with. And then cross-correlating various facts and pieces of information to find out whether this fact is right or that one, or if two opinions appear, which one is correct, and so on, is still another mountainous task. So what we're doing is two basic things with computers. First, we're coding all of the information that we can from all the sources we can about people, organizations, times, places, events, relationships between and among all these things, and sort of cross-correlation of the type of information that we think is going to be important. Then, from each of these coding structures, for example, we may find two people who met on such and such a date in such and such a place. We'll code that information, feed it into a computer.
And what answers come out?
We could get that information back if we ask for it. In other words, we could say, were these two people together,
well,
and if so, on what time?
Tell
right.
Is important in doubt. How do you?
But that sounds fairly simple. You know, if I put in simple information
who
like that.
Who stayed there? Who came and left?
Yeah.
You know?
But if I put that information in, and along with it, I put in 1,000 other facts about those two individuals and where they were at various times, and then I say to you, now you tell me when. Give me any occasion which those two fellows were together, it gets pretty complicated, you know? You really can't do that without a tremendous amount of research.
But the computer can...
The computer can do this and do the dog work, if you want to call it that, or the spade work, or the hard effort. And, of course, you have to program the computer properly to do what you want it to do. We have an expression, GIGO, G-I-G-O, which means garbage in, garbage out.
Yeah, well, I wonder...
If you don't put something real in, you won't get something real back.
Yeah, we're going to take a break now. It's 4:30, KLRB, Carmel, California. 1 minute before, but we'll say it's 4:30.